All right, well, thank you all for coming back this afternoon. It's good to be here with you. All right, so we're going to talk a little bit about Microsoft Edge and the web app platform. We're also known as the best session of the day. Okay, for the web developers out there, you're going to love this information. It's going to tell you everything about what's new with Windows 10. And I was listening to the UAP session when Pete did it and was talking about all those new features that you have in XAML. So for all the XAML developers, you're going to want to listen to this too, because these are going to be your new features 5 years from now. Okay? I'm just kidding. I'm sure that's not true. Okay. So we've gotten a lot of feedback from developers over the years, and that's really what kind of drives us to change at Microsoft. So I want to kind of wrap this around three of the major feedback areas from developers. With web, we want more interoperability. That means we want our code to work by just writing it one way and having it run the same way everywhere. We want new features. We're always asking for more of the W3C standards, more features within the browser that we can do that do things that other applications do. And the third thing is we want less boundaries between web and native apps. So there's no reason why you have a great web app that you can't distribute that through the store. So let's stop and talk about more interoperability. Now, to understand why we're doing some of the work we are with Microsoft Edge, it's important to take a step back and look at Internet Explorer and where we came from. So, a little test here, 44 billion, what does that number represent? Anybody? Okay, that's the number of websites that are out in the world today. And another number for you, trillions. That's the number of pages that are indexed on the web every day. So you can imagine with 44 trillion with trillions of pages on 44 billion websites, you can imagine there's a lot of different code that runs different ways. So if you look at it as a whole, it can be really hard or impossible to write a browser that works across all of those. But luckily, we at Microsoft have a little product that we call Bing.com. Anyone ever heard of it? Come on, all right, review, okay. But you know, one of the great benefits of having Bing is that it's out there indexing the web every day. So it's looking at all these websites, and we can look at the results that Bing gets back, and we can identify major patterns that are being used by developers. So what we've done with Edge is we've taken the info we're collecting from Bing, we look at those patterns, and we make sure that each one of those major patterns works in Edge. Now, that doesn't mean we're not also writing to standards. Web standards continue to be important to us in how we really suggest that developers write their code. But there's also patterns out there that don't follow standards. And we're going to give you a few examples of that in a few moments. All right, so Internet Explorer started 20 years ago. Now, 20 years ago, the world was very different. For those of you who weren't alive then, this was our world. That's how long ago it was. Now, the web was also very different 20 years ago. It didn't change like it does now. Today, we deploy applications every day, sometimes twice a day, sometimes five times a day. The web, every page changes all the time. Well, 20 years ago, the web moved very slowly. There wasn't a lot of change. There wasn't frequent change. It was more of a platform that you published and let stand. So it was very important that you never broke the web, because the web may never go back and get fixed. So 20 years ago, we were very concerned when we had a browser that we didn't do anything to the browser that would break the past. So we also focused on compatibility. And to do that, we came up with different engines. So, for example, in IE6, we ran two engines, one that we called standard or strict mode, the other one that we called quartz mode, which was really saying this is how it rendered in IE5 and before. And then, depending on your page and how it was written, we would switch back and forth between the two. Well, we kept doing that, and we added another engine in 7 and 8. And then we added the dock type to render the standard dock type or fall back to Quark's mode if there wasn't one. And then we also added another one in 9, and another one in 10, and another one in 11. And you can imagine, that's how we got where we are today. With IE11, we have engines that render according to each of the different phases of the web. Now, you may think that it's just something simple that we do, that we just switch back and forth between new engines and old engines, but it doesn't actually work that way. So our rendering engines have to catch the different conditions that apply to that specific rendering engines. It's much like a case in JavaScript where we say, if X is equal to A, then do this. If it's B, do this. If it's C, do this. If it's D, do this. And that, as you can imagine, affects the performance of the browser, and it makes it very difficult for us to implement updates to the browser. So in comes Microsoft Edge. This is the world that we live in today. As a web developer, we write to all of these different browsers. Now, this is from Browser Stack. If you go into Browser Stack, you can choose any of these configurations to test your application. And as web developers, we do need to test. Now, this isn't just the problem that we have on desktop. So mobile also has this same issue of fragmentation. This data that we have on the screen now comes from Quark's Mode a few months ago, where they did a little study about the currently used versions of Chromium. So those are ones that are actually being used by people today. And they found out with the different makers of phones who were taking the Chromium bits and building their own browser and using different versions that never got updated, it ended that after all of those splits, less than 40% of users were on a stable updating version of Chrome. So only less than 40% were using the latest version. That makes it harder for us as web developers to write a single application that works on all of those different platforms if only 40% of our users is up to date. So our goal with Microsoft Edge was to be able to get our users on a single platform that keeps itself up to date. Now, the great thing about Microsoft Edge is that it is a browser that will run across the entire device family of Windows 10. So that's everything from a HoloLens to an Xbox to a phone and a PC will all run the same browser. So you as a developer know that your content will render the same on all the different Windows devices. The other great thing about Microsoft Edge is it's evergreen. And what we mean by that is that it's always up to date, that the content is always fresh. So the browser is always fresh. So we deploy new code and update the engines. Instead of adding engines like we did in Internet Explorer, we're just simply updating it so that users always have the newest version. This happens not only with the rendering engine, but the JavaScript engine as well. And again, happening across the entire family of devices. Now, compatibility was an important part of the changes that we're bringing to Microsoft Edge. We want to make sure that the web just works for users, no matter how the web page is written. And that starts by us adjusting the user agent. Now, what I have on the screen here is the user agent from the top major browsers, and everything that is in red is a lie, a little lie. But they're all lies. So, for example, Chrome is not Mozilla 5.0. In fact, Mozilla is not Mozilla 5.0. None of them are Gecko. None of them are KHTML. Does anyone even know what Gecko refers to? What is it? I can't hear you, but I'm gonna assume you said Netscape Navigator. Is that's the answer. Gecko is Netscape Navigator. And that's like, remember that first screen with 20 years ago? That's the time period. See, they're all just have strings that represent the browser, but they don't represent what they really are. Now, if you as a web developer are writing code that is delivering different versions of your website based on the user agent, then you're probably getting it wrong, because the user agents don't clearly identify what the browser is. So one of the first things that we've done, and you see in the bottom here with Edge, is we've changed the user agent to try to include parts of the user agent from every single browser. That way, no matter what code is being delivered based on the browser type, they'll send the newest code to Microsoft Edge. And us getting the newest code, we then work to make sure that that code runs properly. So here's an example. This is a site, a Hawaiian Airlines site. And just so you know, since we've worked with them to update this, so it doesn't happen anymore, but this is the experience you get when you're on a Firefox phone. The experience is the middle that is what you get when you're on an iPhone, and the far experience is what you get when you're on a Windows phone. So aside from the iPhone, there are other ones are horrible experiences for users. And it's because the developers had written that site specifically for iPhones. Now what we've done, we updated the user agent, and now this is the experience with Microsoft Edge. In addition to updating the user agent, we also handled a few other common patterns that developers are using on the web. One is taking care of gradients. So many gradients out there today are prefixed with a vendor prefix -webkit because they were originally written to run on an iPhone or an Android phone. What we found at Microsoft when we did the analysis, we can take away the webkit, just ignore that part, and all we have is a gradient. And that gradient works just fine on our browsers. So we're ignoring the prefixes. The second thing that we've done is we've adjusted the way that we've loaded fonts. Now, iPhones load fonts in a very specific way. It's not too standard, but we found if we load the fonts the same way, then many of the things like icons just start working for our users. And last but not least, touch is very important. There are a lot of sites out there that use touch start, touch end events to handle the touch on a mobile website. Those are not standards, but they are common practices. So in addition to the standard of pointer events, we also support the pattern of touch events so that if a site is written for an iPhone, it all just works on Microsoft Edge. And see, that's our goal, is to just make sure that what is written out there on the web is going to work for our users. And it's for you to, as developers, it means that less testing will have to go on for you. Because if you write to the patterns that are common and standard, then your code is just going to work on Edge. So we have new features as well. And we commonly get asked for specific features from developers. And so we're glad to have over 45 new W3C standards present in Microsoft Edge. And this is just some of them here. Now, I'm going to jump over to a demo and kind of show you what is possible in the modern web today. Can you move over to input one? All right, so I'm using Visual Studio here, and I have my Edge browser. Now the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to show you a demo that we have that's written in WebGL, very similar to the technologies that were used for the Flight Arcade. This is more of an immersive experience for us. I can get it to load. This is hitting my local machine, so I'm not really sure where all the traffic is, but. All right. So this is an experience that is built with WebGL and Web Audio, which we weren't actually able to hear this morning. But Web Audio allows you to have very precise timing of the audio. Now this is kind of a spooky scene, I'm not going to leave you here too long, but it allows you to control with your mouse, with your keyboard. In this case, I'm going to actually activate my gamepad control. Now the gamepad API is one that can you turn that volume down just a little? Sorry. The Gamepad API doesn't require you to install anything. There's no plugins for it. There's no drivers that the user has to install. They just plug in their controller and go. Now you see we have a little bit of a setting here, right? So I'm going to kind of switch to touch and look at some of the things that we have here. Okay, the grave of Hamlet, which of course you would expect to be right beside what? The grave for Clippy, may he rest in peace. And then we've got the cat, the Cheshire cat there beside it. And of course, right beside him is, what is that there? The grave for IE6. Now, when we click this one, let's see what happens. There we go. But you can see that in order to be able to time the audio and the video together, the audio and the experience together, it requires very precise controls. And that's something that we have today with WebGL and Web Audio to work together. All right, now I do have another one here for you. Okay. All right, now, this one is, this is what we call the drunken browser. Does this look familiar to anyone? You ever like been out on a night and you said one too many and you come home and try to use the internet? Don't do it next time. But anyways, this is what it would look like. Now this is a very strange experience. Basically, we're just taking all of the things on the page and we're kind of applying a filter to it. Well, this is how we're doing this. We actually are actually using something that's called a foreign objects spec. And what that allows us to do is it allows us to embed non-SVG items inside of SVG. So in this case, we're embedding an iframe inside of SVG. So that's what we have right here. You'll see inside of this SVG element, we have a body and then an iframe tag. The iframe is pointing to Bing.com. Now, since it's a SVG item, we can actually use SVG filters, which is what we're doing here. We're just applying a few filters to that to give it that, you know, drunken look. Now I'm gonna actually change out these filters. I will comment these ones out and uncomment this one. And we change the filters and we'll change the experience. So now we'll go back here and refresh it. And this is what we call the Minecraft browser. Now you guys might be too old for Minecraft, but trust me, the kids these days will love this. So in my Minecraft browser, I'm going to search for Minecraft images. And this is the way I feel when I'm looking at Minecraft. I feel like I'm looking at a world. So now I'm in my Minecraft browser looking at Minecraft images. It's like mind-blowing, right? It's Inception, Minecraft inside of Minecraft. But again, all we're really doing here is we're taking an SVG item and we're applying filters to it. So you can see some of the creative and easy to implement solutions that this gives you as a developer. Now, we're also going to do a little session in a little bit. Can you switch me back over to number four? In a little bit, we're going to do a session about web audio and get into that more deeper. So I'm going to leave those demos for the web audio session. But the web is evolving into a platform that allows you to build incredible experiences. We talked a few minutes ago about not honoring browser, using browser prefixes. And what had browser prefixes put us in a situation where it almost versioned the web. So like other browser makers like Firefox and Chrome, Microsoft Edge is also switching to a pattern of using flags to turn on experimental features. So you can go into your Microsoft Edge browser, you can type about colon flags, and you can actually get a list of the features that are experimental in the browser. And what this does is it gives the user the ability to turn experimental features on and off instead of the developer. So you as a developer can still test and play with these experimental users without implementing them on your site for everyone. We always recommend that you as a developer use feature detection to determine what code you're going to run rather than browser detection. And the flags work great with that. So if you want an experimental feature, you just feature detect for it, and if it exists, then you go ahead and run the code. So moving on a little bit, we showed in this morning's keynote how you can take a web experience, a website or a web app, and move it into an app experience. And we've had a lot of developers who have asked us for this in the past and have worked to bring those worlds closer together. So with Windows 10, we're able to formalize that and build that right into the operating system. And what it is we created something that is called hosted applications. Now there's other platforms out there that already do hosted applications, which allows you to submit your website to things like the Chrome Store or the Firefox Store. But we've had a lot of requests to be able to do this on Windows, but at the same time still have access to all the Windows APIs. Now when we talk about the hosted app, think about where we start. We start with Microsoft Edge, and inside of Microsoft Edge, we have a rendering engine. We have a JavaScript engine that are always up to date, updated regularly. And instead of presenting it in the browser, we present it as an application. So the same rendering engine, the same JavaScript engine is used. And that means as long as your code runs in Edge, it's going to run in the hosted app as well. Now when you're inside the application, you can have your code in different places. It can be packaged in the app, and we started this with Windows 8, where you can package JavaScript apps. You can leave it on the web server and point to it, or you can mix in between and have some of that content hosted and some of it packaged. Now with a packaged application, there's a lot of tools out there that can make that experience work across platform. And since we're web developers, our code already naturally works across platform. It's built to work in different browsers. So one of the great solutions out there is Cordova. Now, the Visual Studio team has done an immense amount of work to build Cordova support right into the Visual Studio tooling. That means within Visual Studio, you can build a Cordova application that runs not only on Windows, but on iOS and Android as well. And you're even able to test and debug it on iOS and Android from Visual Studio and Windows. So it's a great experience if you are a Cordova developer. Now with Windows 10, we can also support all the Cordova scenarios. So the package and the hosted and even the embedded Cordova scenarios. Now, kind of in the middle of the host and the package lies the web view, because the web view allows you to point to content through a web browser in your application or content on your server. Now, like the hosted app and the packaged app, your web view is always up to date. That means when Microsoft Edge gets updated, the web view gets updated as well. We have improved performance on the web view. We have new features on the web view. One of them in particular is the Add Web Allowed Object. And what this does is it allows you to determine which parts of your native code can be called from your web view. That means you can have a C# or a C++ object in your application, And you can say you want to allow that object for web. You can then use the add web allow to object to reflect the native classes into your JavaScript DOM. That means the JavaScript sees them as JavaScript methods. So the JavaScript can call the native classes directly, and the native classes can respond to the JavaScript objects. So no longer do you have to build a bridge and stringify code and do things that cause performance issues and make it difficult for you. Your web code can call native code directly. Okay, with the hosted apps, I want to spend a few minutes here because this is something that's new for us at Microsoft. We talked this morning again. Hosted apps allow you to publish your web content to the Windows Store. When you're in a Windows app, we then know that you're a developer registered with Microsoft, you're in that package space that's sandboxed on a user's application, so we can then provide you permission to access all of the Windows APIs. So that's things like live tiles and toast notifications, but it's also things like beacons and Bluetooth. Remember this morning we showed how David controlled the plane with the band. That's just Bluetooth access through the Microsoft Band SDK inside an application. It also allows you to create native code in an application and call that directly from your website as a hosted app. So if we can switch back over to machine number one. I'm gonna show you a few demos here. All right, so the first thing I'm gonna do is I'm gonna pull up a site I have here. Okay, go. Now this is called Shifter. And I don't know if you've ever seen those apps, websites that help you meet other people, you know, like on a date and, you know, fall in love and get married and have 12 kids type of thing. Well, we're developers, and not that we don't like people, because I'm sure we all like people, but we probably like code more. Is there anyone else like that? So what this application does is it helps developers meet new frameworks. Okay, so what you do is you come to Shifter and you decide whether you like a framework or you don't like a framework. You can click the like if you like it, and then if you don't like it, you just, you know, it keeps coming. So it's just a fun little app that we want to use, and we're going to package it as an application. So I'm going to take the URL here, and then the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go back to Visual Studio. I'm going to open a new project, and I'm going to choose a blank JavaScript app. Now this should be familiar to you if you're a Windows developer, because I'm going to open up a new project and you're going to see all my code on the right hand side here. Well, remember, this hosted app is pointing to the server, so I don't need that code there. So I'm going to go ahead and start deleting it. Get rid of the CSS, the JavaScript, Node.js, and even the HTML. And so basically, I have a package that has images in it. Now, I can't actually delete the images because those are like the tile and the splash screen, the things that we need to load before the application loads. So I'm going to leave the images there. And then I'm going to open up my Apex manifest, and I'm going to have a start page label here. So I'm going to point the start page to my website, and then I need to do one other thing. I need to come in here and I need to add some URL content rules, okay? So I'm going to add a rule here. And then for this rule, I need to include a few things. The first is the domain that it's going to match. The second thing is the type. I'm going to include it. And then the last thing is the Windows runtime access, which I want to give it access to all. And I'm going to explain what this does in a minute. But I just added that one line into there, and now I'm going to run this. And you'll see the Shifter web application is now a Shifter Windows application. Works the same way. You can choose the framework you want, but it's presented as a Windows app. So it has the same characteristics as a Windows application. It has the same sandboxing that an application does, so that it has a dedicated memory space and is able to be updated through the store and downloaded from the user as live tiles and all those type of things. So it's a great way to, with very little effort, move your application into that Windows space. Okay, can you move back to number four? Now, one of the difficult things about building hosted applications is that for every platform, it's required that you build a different type of package and a different type of manifest. So I just showed you using the Windows manifest to build one. If you want to submit to Chrome, you have to build a Chrome manifest. If you want to submit to Firefox, you're going to have to submit a Firefox manifest, and so on and so forth. So what we're doing with the other browser makers is we're working with the W3C on this standard that's called the Manifest for Web Apps. And what this is it's a familiar JSON object that handles all the metadata related to your web app. Okay? And this way, there will be one standard manifest that we can use to create installable web apps and hosted web apps. So web apps, whether they work in the browser or on the OS. And the goal is to make it for you as a developer, so you only write one manifest that's supported by all the different scenarios. Now this is something that we're working to build into Windows 10 to make it our standard manifest. And also the other browser makers are working on implementation too. Now, Bea mentioned a little early on today that we're big into open source. So one of the newest open source frameworks that I'm working on with some of my fellow developers is called Manifold.js. So Manifold.js takes that W3 standard manifest and will generate for you applications for all the different platforms that support hosted apps. So it'll generate it for Windows 10, it'll generate it for Firefox and Chrome, but then also, even though iOS and Android don't support hosted apps, we're going to use Cordova to polyfill and create hosted apps for iOS, Android, and Windows 8.1 as well. So Manifold.js is pretty simple to use. You install, and if you can move back to number one, please. You install Node.js on your local machine. And once you install Node.js, then you simply do an npm install of Manifold.js, and it brings down all the tools you need. Now, I've already done that on my machine, so I have it set up here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to recreate that same experience I just showed you by taking the URL here. Now I'm going to go back to my command line, and I'm going to type Manifold.js, the URL, and then I'm going to turn on debugging for us so that we can kind of see what's happening. Now what Manifold.js is going to do is it's going to go out to your web server, look at your manifest, your W3C manifest for web apps. Now, if you don't have one, that's okay. It'll actually go and look at the data on your website and create a W3C manifest for you. But it'll go out there, it'll pull in the data from your website, any images that you have for the different stores and the different apps, and it'll bring it all down locally and then build out the packages for each of those platforms. So this is what's happening. You see we're already going and pulling down that manifest file. Now we're creating the applications. It's running. Okay, it says the applications are ready. So I'm going to go in here, the Shifter app, and see the different applications projects that it's created for me. Let's look at this here. So you can see I have an Android project, and just as you would expect, inside there is a Java project that will run on Android. Here's one for Chrome. This is what you submit to the Chrome store. Firefox as well. This is what you submit to the Firefox store. iOS, web, if you don't have a manifest on your website already, we'll generate that for you. And then even Windows 10 and Windows 8.1. So that same manifest is there for you to submit. So it makes it easy to create those applications, not just for Windows, but all the applications together. See, this app is more inspired by Windows 10. We've got feedback from developers that they love the way that it works with Windows 10, and they want to be able to do that across all platforms. Since our web code is already cross-platform, it just makes sense to support that. Okay, so I have that application installed here, and I'm going to open that up. Oh, wrong application. Now I also have that application installed, the same application installed on my iOS device, and then my Android device as well. This is the newest Android phone. They just keep getting bigger and bigger, right? So you have that same application here, so works the same. Now, when you move out of the browser and into an application space, you have to find ways sometimes to do things like debugging. Now, when you're inside of tools like Visual Studio, you get great tools for debugging your applications, but when you're building applications across platform, it's nice to have a tool that helps debug them across platform as well. So we have one of those tools. It's another framework that we're developing here. It's called Vorlon.js. So I'm going to go ahead and open that, and then I'm going to load my applications back up. And what Vorlon does is it will actually make sure that these are running. It's actually going to go out and look at all the different applications that are connected to your dashboard. So these are all the different ones that are connected to this site at the same time. Even though they're not in the browser, they're running inside the applications. Vorlon.js is added to my website so I can do this debugging. Now, whenever I start to click into here, we'll look at the Windows one. I'm going to move this here and then show you the application beside it. I can first identify which one I'm looking at, and then I can start going through and analyzing the DOM and seeing what the DOM elements are doing on the page. Likewise, I can do that for the Object Explorer and look at the DOM elements that are in the elements that are in the DOM there. I can even run JavaScript from my client in the application. So from the Vorlon.js dashboard, I can run JavaScript that executes on those different devices. Now right now I'm using this on the same machine, right? I have the app deployed right beside it. But think about the fact that many of your users may be on the other side of the world. And Vorlon gives you a way to be able to do all that debugging at once. And I think David is going to have a little bit of a session on that next to kind of explain the details of that. Vorlon is also an open source framework. So Manifold.js and Vorlon.js are frameworks that work together to help you build, can you move back to number four, please? That help you build your applications, deploy them across the different platforms, and then continue to debug them. So these frameworks, inspired by Windows 10. So we love, and developers tell us that they want to do what's happening on Windows 10 across platform. Now I'm going to put in a little pitch here, because open source frameworks require development time. They require developers to be involved. So I'd like to invite you all to go to Manifold.js or Vorlon.js and help out. Join in and help the development. Now, for building those applications, I neglected to mention, with Manifold.js, we also actually have a web version of the generator where you can go, if you don't even want to install Node.js on your machine, you can actually just go to the website, and since it's Node.js, it runs on a server, and you can use the web form to do this. So I'm going to go ahead and type in my web address there and hit get started. And it does the same thing that I just showed you with the command line. It's going to go out, collect that information, and provide for you a W3C manifest, and all the different apps can be downloaded right from the website. So we encourage you to be involved there. Going forward, for more information about Microsoft Edge, and to tell you if you want to help vote on what features you want to see implemented in Microsoft Edge as well, you can go to dev.modern.ie to find out more. For the web app platform, the developments that we're making there, go to dev.windows.com and learn about how you can take your web experiences and turn them into Windows apps. We have links there for Cordova, and then of course the open source tools, Roland.js and Manifold.js. Go check them out, tell us what you think, help us out, do some pull requests, we'd love to have your help on that. So the web platform on Windows 10, bringing your web experiences to a new modern browser and beyond. All right, that's all we have. Thank you for your time.